Hello guys. So the topic today is venturing into large Hadoop clusters. The agenda of the talk is basically what are the issues which we faced as part of our platform team, the issues which were reported by the product teams in Huawei, and what are the solutions which we gave to that, and what are the ongoing Jiras and ongoing work in the Hadoop community with regards to large clusters and how we are solving issues with regards to large clusters. So, who we are? So, I am Varun Saxena. I am a senior technical lead at Huawei. Huawei is one of the largest telecom manufacturers in the world. We use big data solutions primarily. We develop big data solutions as part of our platform team, and we give it to various product teams in Huawei, which then sell it off to multiple telecom operators and maybe even banks as well. Means we have a few banks as our customers as well. So I'm an Apache Hadoop committer. I am, as I said, I'm working in the Hadoop platform dev team. So we, as such, we do not have a DevOps kind of an experience. We are not directly interfacing with the customer as such. So we get issues from the product team, and then we give solutions to it. So the talk will primarily be about the architectural changes which are being made all across Hadoop. I have overall 8.5 years of experience. My co-speaker will be Naga Narasimha. Naga, you can call him. He's system architect at Huawei. He's also an Apache Hadoop committer. He works with me. Both of us primarily work on YARN. And he has around 12.5 years of experience working in the IT industry. So we start with what are the challenges or what are the issues which we face in a large YARN cluster. So many of you, means all of you know here YARN or HDFS, or it's like you do not know or something. Anyways, I'll brief you about how YARN is structured. So YARN has a single node, which is resource manager, which is used for scheduling, which is used for it has an overall view of the cluster and the resources within the cluster. It is responsible for allocating resources to various applications which are running on top of a YARN cluster. There are then multiple agents which are running as YARN, which we call YARN node manager, which will actually execute the tasks on those nodes, and which will actually tell you about the resources which are there on those nodes. So they register to YARN RM, and then RM knows about whatever is there on the cluster. RM, in the background on the left hand side in the green, you can see it uses a zookeeper state store. This is required for high availability. So it maintains the states which are necessary for it to recover from any crash. Okay, we also have an application timeline server. So these are the components which we are going to talk about in this talk. That's why I have covered it here. Application timeline server is basically used for maintaining the metadata and maintaining all the events which are occurring for an application over a period of time. It stores them in the backend. It currently uses LevelDB store. Okay, so we are going to touch upon it as well. The blocks in red are application master and container. Most of you would be already knowing what it is. So as I said, that YARN RM is a single instance. So as YARN RM is a single instance, scalability of YARN is completely dependent on it. So it depends on the number of nodes and applications running on the cluster as well. How it matters based on that node heartbeats come to YARN RM. So if you have, like, as the cluster scales up, it goes over tens of thousands of nodes, then RM will be overloaded. And also, applications running in the cluster, they have to be scheduled. You'll have AM heartbeats, which will also be coming. Another challenge which we face, so as the cluster grows, as the application grows, the size of applications grows, RM becomes overloaded. So this is one of the challenges which we face as our clusters grow larger, as our customers grow bigger. Another issue is mean time to recovery, as in when RM starts up after it crashes, it should not take a huge amount of time. It should not be that it is taking almost 1 minute to start up. So this is another challenge, another issue which we found from our customer. It was taking almost 40 to 50 seconds to start up. So that is something which we resolved. Also, as Hadoop clusters grow, so does the metadata generated by them, as in the events, the historical apps which we store in application timeline service, they grow quite a bit as well. And a single instance of Yarn application timeline server, which you can see on the left-hand side, then becomes a bottleneck. So as metadata grows, managing the metadata also becomes a big data problem of sorts. Also, what happens is that when you have a large cluster, it becomes difficult to debug workflows. You have multiple applications coming from various flows. And as you see in a Yarn UI, it is basically you will have applications one by one. You do not know from where they are generated. What is it? Is it a Hive query? Is it a pig or a scalding task or what it is? So those are a few of the challenges which we faced, few of the issues which we got from our customer. We had some small issues as well with regards to pagination and all of that, means as in the UI was taking too much time to display all the records. But those are small issues which we will just cover in very short. Challenges in a large HDFS cluster. So this is about HDFS. A few of you will already be knowing a few of the things which have been already included in Hadoop since quite a few releases, but as you know, name node memory usage of name node is a big issue in HDFS. So while storage is scalable on account of ability to add more data nodes, the name node itself, the metadata stored by the name node, is not easily scalable in HDFS. So that is one issue which is there. We reused HDFS Federation for this in our version, latest version, so that's why we are covering it here. Also in a large cluster, storage requirements will increase proportionally as well, as in you'll require more storage as the number of files which you're storing on HDFS increases as you have a larger cluster. So HDFS does replication, as you know, by default. It will do three times replication, three-way replication. So that is very expensive because you then require three times the storage as well. So these are a few of the things which we'll cover. The architecture of name node and data node, how they are structured, it is similar along the lines of RM and NM, which I talked about. So that is how it is structured. The replication part I have also shown here in the diagram for those who do not know HDFS. So we'll cover topics one by one. So as in what we are doing to resolve these issues which we are facing in a large cluster. What do I mean by a large cluster? A cluster which is scaling up to more than 10,000 nodes, that is what I am talking about. So gradually our customers are going towards that. We currently, our largest cluster at any customer site is around 5,000 nodes, but we are gradually moving towards it. We are getting interest from certain customers which want a larger cluster, and that's where Yarn Federation comes in. So if you want to scale your cluster, Yarn cluster, to tens of thousands of nodes, this is a new feature which is coming in Yarn. There's work going on in the community regarding this. And you can follow the Jira Yarn 2915 for more details, but I'll cover a snapshot of what it does here in the talk. Okay, so why do we need Yarn Federation? So as I talked about before, scalability of Yarn depends on a single instance of RM. How much Yarn can scale is proportional to the number of nodes which you add to it, the number of running applications which are going on at any particular time, and frequency of NMRM or RMAM heartbeats. Means if you decrease the frequency, what happens is that RM does not need to process so many heartbeats at the same point of time. So you can actually achieve scalability by reducing the heartbeat frequency, but the issue with that then happens is that it can delay container allocation and it can lead to suboptimal scheduling, means that the containers might not be allocated in time, or you might not get, because in RM, if few of you know, container allocation is done when NM heartbeat comes, and AM will get the container when AM heartbeat comes. So that is how the containers are given and all that. So that can actually lead to a slower performance in the cluster. So this is the Yarn Federation architecture. So Federation, as many of you would be knowing, it is about breaking up of a large cluster into multiple pieces. So what do we do here is a large Yarn cluster is broken up into multiple small subclusters with a few thousand nodes each, typically around 4,000 to 5,000 nodes. Okay, it has a router service, it has a AMRM proxy service, and it is policy in a state store. So I'll talk about it one by one. The router service is basically in a federated cluster. Router service is where you submit your application to. You do not submit it to RMs. So it is so all the RMs which are there in each one of the subclusters are hidden from the client. So the client submits the application to router service. It exposes application client protocol, which is used to talk to Yarn RM right now. So router service will also expose the same thing, and it will be able to talk to it. It is a stateless, scalable service, so you can have multiple routers if you want. If, for example, you find that one router is overloaded, you can have multiple routers at the same time. Router service will read a policy from policy store, as you can see here. So what policy will decide is that where to route my request to. So there will be multiple things which will you can also decide what the policy will be, but one of the policies can be load balancing, as in, or you can have a round robin policy or whatever. So that is a pluggable policy. You write the policy into the store, so you decide what you want. But typically we'll use it for load balancing. So you will decide which cluster is overloaded at this particular moment, and then you will submit the app to that particular subcluster. So the cluster to which the application then goes to from the router service is called the home subcluster. We call it the home subcluster. And all the other clusters are called secondary subclusters. So federation, the way policy is designed and the way scheduling happens, what will happen is that most of the tasks will be allocated on the home subcluster itself. We will not go around and go to the secondary subclusters until and unless required. So what do I mean by until and unless required? If, for example, your home cluster is becoming overloaded for some reason, a particular app is using too many containers, then you will spread the containers across multiple subclusters. The other service which is there is AMRM proxy service. So AMRM proxy service is also very important for distributing your tasks across subclusters. So once an application has been submitted, afterwards the tasks can potentially go to any of the subclusters. So it hides the details of RM again from the application masters. It implements the application master protocol. So all the requests will be routed through this AMRM proxy service, and AMRM proxy service again will read the policy and decide where to send the request to. So I'll talk a little bit about AMRM proxy service in the next slide. It runs currently as part of the node manager. It can be a separate daemon as well in future. So that is what it is. The next one is policy in state store. So I have touched upon it a little bit as well. It can be Zookeeper backed store or it can be a DB backed store. The federation state basically defines that which are the subclusters registered or which are the clusters which have joined to this federated overall cluster. The policy store, as I said, will decide where the requests have to be routed to from the router, from the AMRM proxy service. So all those policies will be written into the policy store. For more details about the structure of what it contains, you can go to the Jira, because it will be very difficult to cover it here. Next, I'll move to AMRM proxy internals. So AMRM proxy internally has an interceptor kind of a pattern. It has a chain of interceptors which you can configure. So you can use it for throttling as well. Means if you have a bad AM which is just pushing in requests, multiple resource requests, you can identify a bad AM and probably throttle it. And then you have a federation interceptor which will then have the logic, or will read the policy and have the logic for sending the request across to multiple subclusters. So that's it about Yarn Federation in short. The next topic which I am going to cover is Yarn Application Timeline Service, next generation, or ATSV2 as we call it. This is, we are trying to improve on the Application Timeline Service, which we talked about in the first slide, first or second slide. So I'm going to cover what are the issues currently in the current solution and what we are trying to improve. So overview of ADSB1, that is something which we have currently. So ADSB1, I will talk a little bit about what it does. That's why I have this slide, although it's not directly related to large cluster per se, but what ADS-V1 does is that it has the notion of a timeline entity, which is published to the timeline server. So timeline entity carries all the metadata which I was talking about, which is then published to timeline server. So it is an abstract concept of anything. What does it mean is that it can contain anything. You can have an entity ID, you can have an entity type, and then you can carry any kind of entity in it. So you are not restricted to, for example, only publish yarn application or a yarn container or a yarn application attempt or anything of that sort. You can publish anything which you want. Okay, so you can, for example, even publish Tez entities from Tez. You can publish Spark entities from Spark and all of that. So we can also define relationship between entities. So what happens there is that you can link up, say, an application attempt to an application and a container to an application attempt. So it provides that facility. It also encapsulates events, as in you can tell that my application started now, my container has been localized now, my container has finished now, or failed now, or whatever. So all those events you can publish as well. It also contains primary filters on the basis of which you can index these entities for faster querying, for also finding out relevant data. For example, a primary filter can be a user. So you can say user equal to Varun and publish it with the entity so that later on you can find out that, okay, all these, this particular user has all these containers, all these applications, all these application attempts. As I told previously, ADS-V1 is a separate single process. It has a pluggable store, but it uses LevelDB by default, which is a lightweight key value store. And it has a lot of REST interfaces to actually query, but that is not part of the talks because it's not directly related to large clusters, so I'll not cover it. So why do we need ADS-V2 then? Means if we have all this facility in ADS-V1, it can generically publish all the entities. So scalability was a concern for ADS-V1. As I said, there was a single global instance of writer or reader. There was a single process from which you were writing all the entities. There was a single process through which you were reading all the entities. And we found in open source community as well, several Jiras filed for this being a bottleneck. When the events were coming too fast, when the frameworks were pushing too many entities, there was a huge performance problem. Also, ADS-V1 uses local disk-based LevelDB storage, so it's just on the disk, it's not on the, not even on HDFS. So if the disk goes down or anything of that sort, if you do not have RAID or anything, then your data is lost, it is gone. Usability, as I talked about, that applications are distinct entities, but they might be part of a bigger operation. Means, for example, you might have a Hive query, which is maybe joining three or four, which is doing three or four joins across tables. So you might have two or three MR jobs launched as part of that. But how do I relate that this application belongs to that particular Hive query? So there was no notion of a flow as such in ADS-V1. So ADS-V2 plans to introduce that. We also elevate configuration and matrix to first class members. So previously we had no way to decide that, we cannot identify that this is a matrix or this is, you can push it as part of info in ADS-V1, but you cannot identify that as a matrix and you cannot filter on the basis of that. So we found that in a very large cluster, there are certain important metrics which can probably help us know certain laggard jobs. For example, we can, from a MapReduce world, you can say that I can find out that how much spill is happening. So that can be a metric which I can publish. And then I can find out that, okay, this is the application which is doing the maximum amount of spill. And then I can go deep down and further find out that why spill is happening for these applications. So that way I can go have a top-down approach instead of somebody reporting to me that, okay, this application is not performing well, please check what is happening. So you can have a top-down approach to checking all the things. So that is what we felt that by having matrix as filters will be very useful. We also do aggregation. What aggregation means, I'll cover in a later slide, but it is basically rolling up all the metrics from the lowest level to the highest level, as in from the containers up to the level of a flow. So you have an overall view of what the workflow which you have implemented is doing. So I'll cover it later on anyways. Reliability, again, as I said that the level DB storage is on local disk, so that is where reliability is an issue. And we have a single timeline server daemon. There was, it is not in a high availability mode, so it can crash down. So reliability is an issue. Okay, so ADSP 2 key design points. So what we now have, instead of a single process, we have distributed writers or collectors. So what do we have is a bunch of writers which will be launched as one writer will be launched as part of RM, and there will be one writer per node which will be launched for an application. So collectors are launched per application. So what happens there is that if you have an application which is pumping in a huge amount of data that is not impeding upon the progress or the metadata flushing or publishing of another application. So we isolate the work of two different applications. What we also do is that RM now, what we are doing is we are removing container events from there. So container events can be quite a lot. You can have thousands of containers per application. So you do not want RM to be overloaded. So we just publish basic application events or application attempt events, which will be very few from RM. So what happens here is that whenever an application master is launched, a timeline collector or a timeline writer will be launched on that particular node. This currently runs as part of node manager. So for example, RM decides that I have five nodes. It decides on node 3, I'll go and launch an application master. So on node 3, you will have a timeline collector which will be launched. Now, every container which is running as part of, or which is running in different node managers, the publishing of that particular entity for that particular application will go to that particular writer only, that is on node 3. Okay, it will not go anywhere else. So you have all the writes happening at a single place. It has a scalable and reliable backend storage, which we currently have implemented it on top of HBase. Contributions are welcome in other areas. Alibaba, for instance, wanted to contribute by using Druid as the backend. So currently we have only HBase, so it is sort of, the design is also somewhat tied up to HBase. It has a new object model API with flows built into it. So I talked a little bit about flows. So it is a first-class citizen now. So you can specify flows while publishing, not while publishing entities, while submitting your application. And that will, when you are publishing entities, that flow information will be taken alongside and will be tagged along it. We have separate reader instances. So we are separating out the reading part of it also. We currently have only one timeline reader. We have only one instance, but we can have a pool. You can start as many as you want. So there is nothing in the design which stops you from doing it. And you can have your IPs that way. There is no router as such to it, but maybe we'll do some work on it in the future. Aggregation, that is rolling up the metric values to parent. Maybe I'll cover it in the slide when it comes through. Okay, so I'll move to the next slide. Collector discovery. So now I said that node manager, all the containers which are coming, which are going on each one of these node managers, how do they find out that where I have to publish? Because the collector is only one for a particular application. So we do collector discovery. What happens is that, as I said, when application master container is launched in a node manager will also launch a collector alongside it. This information, that will be on a particular IP port, host port. So that collector address will then in node manager heartbeat, NMRM heartbeat will be sent across to resource manager. This information will be stored and cached by resource manager. It will also be there in the state store. And this will be sent across to application master as well, because application master also needs to know where it has to publish entities to. So, then as the diagram shows, that node manager 2 and node manager X means whatever are the node managers, they then publish entities to the app collector, which has been informed through the heartbeats. So in red we have the heartbeats, and in green we have the publishing, which is there. So then we write it out to HBase, which is the backend storage. Flow, so this is what a flow looks like. We multiple containers are within an attempt, and then attempt belongs to an application. An application belongs to a flow run. What do I mean by a flow run? It is basically once, means the flow which is being executed, it might be executed multiple times. So you have a Hive query on a particular table. You say that you select on a where clause of a particular column, and that you execute multiple times. You want to identify it as under a single hood, maybe because you want to know the performance of the query at different points of time. So each run of that query will translate into a flow run. So that is what a flow run means. And then all the things will be encapsulated inside a flow. So as I said, flow is a group of yarn applications which are launched as part of a logical app. So here Hive query becomes a logical app, or a Oozie workflow becomes a logical app. Aggregation. So aggregation basically means rolling up matrix from child entity to parent entities. So you can, for those who have worked with yarn, we have matrix like CPU and memory which are at the container level. So right now you can only see them at the container level. You need to find out that, okay, this container has used that much or whatever. So there is no way for this to be promoted up to applications. So this is what we do automatically in ADSV2. We promote all these matrix, combine them, sum it up, and then promote them to application, promote them to flow run, and then promote them to flow. Flow here basically means, in the red, basically means flow run. So I did not want to confuse with flow and flow run too much. It is a single run of a flow. So for instance, container A1 use CPU 400 cores millis basically, and container A2 use 300. So it will be summed up to app, becomes 700, and similarly for app B, and then both the apps belong to a single flow, and then it is promoted up to the flow level. We plan to also support average, max, and all these operations, so various mathematical operations. Right now, only sum is there. So how this helps, probably in a large cluster, is that you find out that, okay, this is what I executed, because users primarily execute Oozie workflows. They don't execute yarn applications. They translate into yarn applications. But they execute those workflows itself. So you want to know, you want to have a view of what this thing is doing, this logical thing is doing. And you also then can probably do your cluster planning a little bit better, instead of making sense out of abstract notions like yarn applications. So you can probably do it even otherwise. You can probably look at all the containers and sum it up by yourself, by your hand, but that is a little bit difficult. So this does it automatically. So possible use cases, cluster utilization and inputs for capacity planning. As I said, you can do reducer and mapper optimizations. We actually want it, we want this feature basically to find out historical, a graph or historical, how this particular flow, for example, has executed over a period of time. And from based on that, we want to make some predictions that how this job will run. And in future, maybe what we would want is that we can maybe reserve a certain amount of resources to meet certain SLAs. So that is where application timeline service can be very useful. So that is our overall plan, and that's why we are contributing to this particular feature. Anyways, it is very useful for DevOps also. You can find out job bottlenecks because the metrics have been promoted right up to the uppermost level. We have a very rich set of API at the reader level. Anyways, that's not related to large clusters, so I'll not talk about it. Maybe you can go to the Jira, relevant Jira, and find out more about it. And we have a full tag from flow to flow run to application to container level, and we can relate all those things very easily. So next, we have Yarn Zookeeper state store improvements, which we had made internally and which we had made in the community as part of large cluster improvement, as part of issues which we faced in large cluster. Naga is going to talk about it and take on from here.
Thanks, Varun. To start off with, why do you require Zookeeper? So basically, to achieve the high availability in Yarn, we store the state in the zookeeper, and then we try to retrieve it when one node you want to do some upgrade or it fails. So in those cases, we use zookeeper. So are we storing all the information, all container information, all application information within the zookeeper? It's not exactly like that. We only store the application information, and we get to know about the running container information from the application itself. But still, if you take a large cluster and if there are lot of applications running in your cluster, then lot of information will lot of applications information need to be stored in the zookeeper. So that's where we had to optimize this. So basically there can be two things which can be going wrong. So amount of data which you're keeping under one zookeeper node, and how fast you are able to access as you are storing a lot of data. So first is during recovery, how fast you are able to read the data. So if you see the existing structure, it is something like you have a zookeeper node, ZKRM state store, and that RM app root, and beneath that we have all the applications, and for each of the applications, application attempt related information is stored. So if you see that, there is only two level, and all the applications will be stored over here. So why do we require to store a lot of applications in the zookeeper? So existing in the RM web UI, if you need to see what all applications has run, then it needs to have all the application information. If in general configuration, we see only 10,000 applications is configured and will be shown in the RM web UI. So ATS V2 has not yet come, and there were a lot of applications which is required to be shown in a large cluster to for the enterprise customer. So we had to increase this number. We couldn't keep only 10,000, we had to increase this number. So they wanted to have it in terms of like 1 lakh applications to be shown in the RM web UI. Not exactly like 1 lakh at a time, maybe based on user, based on filtering, the latest 10 applications, but still he wanted to see all the applications to be available. If not from UI, at least they wanted from REST interface to get the information about the applications. So to start off with, because of this large number of applications, whenever a failover happens, existing flow was, it was reading all the informations, all the nodes information, and then it was starting up. So there is already, usually for large cluster, we keep around 30 seconds delay, and then we do the failover. So it's a normal failover, then it will be very fast. That 30 seconds will not be lost. But if there is any failover, actual failover which happens, then 30 seconds plus the time which is required to read all the data and come up. But for RM to start working, it doesn't require completed application information. So what we did, we segregated these two. So one approach was to keep all the finished application in one folder and all the running applications in one folder. So that would have some compatibility issues and all those stuff. So we preferred one more approach wherein we created one more folder, I mean one more node under zookeeper, and started storing the finished running applications only in that folder. So once the running application finishes, we move it to the normal folder. We delete the node entry which is present, which stores only the running application IDs. It doesn't have any information, it just has the ID information. So by doing this, what we could do is first read in a sequential manner all the running applications, and then we start off the RM starting up. So all the other services will start off, and it has the basic required information so that the whole cluster can come back to its original state. And we were reading the remaining data in parallel for other remaining data we were reading. So by doing this, we got very good improvement, nearly like 2x to 3x times we were able to see the difference, and we were able to achieve whatever desired number of applications which we could store in the zookeeper, and at the same time failover is not affected. So next is, as and when you start storing lot of applications, so there is a limit at the zookeeper how much information you will be able to retrieve and how much zookeeper nodes can be there under one zookeeper node. So we have to address this issue also. So actually in most of the current environments, whoever is using a 10,000, they do not face this problem. But if it is more number of applications, because the folders which we are, Zookeeper nodes which we are having, there will be a limitation on number of nodes which can be there under one node. So what we did is, we had to achieve the compatibility also. So the existing applications, we plan to keep it as it is, and whatever are in the yellow circles, that was the new structure which we created for storing the new applications. So what we did was like, we split the application ID into a configurable number, wherein like if you were like last two digits, till the last two digits, it will be under one node. So basically, if you see over here, example over here, the application ID 10299, suppose in under one node, you want to store 100, then I'll configure that split size as 2, so that it will be stored under 102 hierarchy and 99 applications will be stored under one node. So it's again three level hierarchy. Earlier it was two level, now it's like three level. So you split, it's configurable based upon your cluster and how much Zookeeper you are using it for. If it is using only for RM, based on that you can configure. So by default you can configure as 3, which behaves in the existing way, wherein you can store 1,000 applications at one shot in one node. So to reduce the amount of data stored in, along with it, the data which is stored, we also had to modify the finished data information. For example, whenever you start a container or launch an application, you need to store the information related to what command it has to run, what are the localization resources which are there, what is the credentials which needs to be passed. So what we did was we removed, once the application finishes, we started removing these contents and then storing it back to the Zookeeper so that the size of the data which is stored in the Zookeeper gets reduced. So one more thing which we tried out, which is still in the test environment, is like we have multiple Zookeeper nodes which are there in the quorum. We try to connect, like whenever we are doing the parallel for the finished apps, we try to connect it to different nodes and try to get the data so that in parallel you are connecting to different quorum nodes and try to get the data. So these were some of the Zookeeper modifications which we did for supporting large cluster. So next is the HDFS modifications which were done, or what the solution which we wanted to suggest for our customers for HDFS large cluster. So as and when the storage increases, the load on the name node increases, the amount of data, amount of metadata of the file structure which needs to be stored increases a lot in the name node. So more and more, like there will be a limit on the memory on every node. So we will usually will not be able to store all the information in a single node. So what solution HDFS Federation offers is it tries to create different namespaces, and each namespace can store certain set of files. So metadata information which was stored earlier in a single node gets split into multiple nodes, and each node will be storing the metadata information. So what happens over here is the load on the, which was earlier there on a single name node, gets reduced and it gets split across multiple name nodes. But here still the data is at the same length, and the data will be spread across all the data nodes, and all data nodes try to report the block informations to the different namespaces which are there. So few of the issues we heard even in yesterday's talk was like we cannot move the data from one data node, one namespace to another namespace. But in general, what we usually have is like a multi-tenant solution wherein each tenant will be given one namespace, and we expect them to have all the data under one namespace. So we hope that we do not face any problems. We need to see how it works out. So over here, though we solved the namespace problem, the name nodes problem, still there is like lot of blocks which are present, and lot of metadata, block information needs to be communicated to the namespace. So more and more blocks are there, more and more size of data is there, then more network traffic will be there. So what we plan to do is support erasure coding, wherein the size of the data can be reduced. And erasure coding is currently available in the trunk branch or 3.0 alpha 2, alpha 1 also it was available. So what we thought was, let us backport this into our 2.8 branch, and we are planning to suggest this one. So let's try to understand what is erasure coding. So as I was explaining, 3x replication leads to 200% storage space over it. So we are trying to have because it depends upon the application logic to compress it and then store. If they're not doing so, then the storage space it will be a lot over it. So along with it, replicating the data, load balancing it, and all those stuff will again have load on the bandwidth, as well as communicating the information about the blocks to the name node will also occupy some network bandwidth. So what TC does is tries to store much lesser amount of information, at the same time provide the reliability of the block. If even part of the information is lost, you should be able to get it. By default, if you see the 3 replication, so it will be able to support 2 failures. Current existing will try to support 2 failures. If you have 3 replicas, 2 failures will be supported. So erasure coding, there are multiple coding techniques for it. So what very simple one to explain would be that XR coding, wherein for every bit, you store one more bit, which becomes parity bits. So suppose you had 2 bits, 1, 1, and you add 2 more extra bits to it, which we call it as parity bits, and a simple XR encoding, 1, XR 0, and parity bit is 1. Okay, so like this, 2 extra information is stored. So even if 1 bit is lost, you will be able to recreate it. So with this, actual size is 2 bits, you are storing extra 2 bits, and still with 1 failover, you will be able to support it. So redundancy is instead of 1, we are storing 2, but still failover, whatever you get, it supports 1 failover. I mean, 1 redundancy. I mean, even if 1 bit is lost, you will be able to recreate it. But the better coding encoding technique is Reed Solomon encoding, which is based on sophisticated linear algebra. You try to generate these parity bits in a much more complex way and much more reliable way. Basically, you will try to generate multiple parity bits, and you will be able to withstand multiple failures. So to give an example, if you take, there will be 2 configuration items in it. One, we call it as the size of the data, and one, we say it as number of bits. So if you take Reed Solomon K of M, then K is the size. Okay. So K is the size of the bits, and M is the number of parity bits you want to have. So for each K, there will be M number of bits which will be generated. So for example, if you have 6, 3, then for every 6 bits, 3 parity bits will be generated. So what happens is, like, for the 6 bits, you apply that linear algebraic operations and then generate this 3. So if any one of these bits fail, so 6 plus 3, so if even 3 bits fail, you'll be able to generate back the old data. If it is 6, 3, and it is configurable, you can increase it based on how much reliability you want and how much failures you can withstand. So there are 2 types of, even in Reed Solomon, there are 2 types. One, basically what we do is striping layout, similar to the RAID 0, we stripe the overall bits into smaller number of chunks and keep it in different blocks. And the other way is contiguous layout, wherein the whole 120, large number of data is taken as the first, wherein we call it as the K, so that you get the better data locality. So for the same block, basically this size is 128 MB, which is the default block size. So the advantage in contiguous bit is you will be having the data locality. So overall, this solution looks good because for 6 bits, earlier you used to store 6 plus 6 plus 6, 18. Now it is 6 plus 3, that is 9. So with half the size, you are able to still withstand 3 failures. Okay, so in that way it is advantageous, but what is the con of this? Why can't we store everything in this? The data generation is very CPU intensive. So there'll be a lot of time to process it. So advantage of all the things will be lost. So we cannot directly suggest this is the solution, use this, all the problems are solved. So what we generally suggest is based on the temperature of the data, try to apply EC to particular set of data. Maybe customer can decide what is the temperature of the data, like maybe after 3 months, I just wanted to move to EC so that the size of the data decreases. Okay. So basically there'll be an additional thing which needs to mark these files as like the existing files to be temperature based. I mean, already we are HDFS supports it. So maybe an external tool or something can be run, and then that marks the data which is older than a specific time, and then you can move those things, additional balancer kind of stuff can be run, and that moves those things to EC. So this is the solution which we plan to suggest to our customers. So these are the links which we referred and the Jira's for the reference. Any questions?
I have a question regarding Jira Federation.
Okay.
Since you said that we have multiple subclusters, what about data? Should we have replicated data or there
is we plan to use these subclusters along with the HDFS Federation as a solution. So HDFS part of it also needs to be handled. That has to be federated as well. So Yarn Federation is something which is ongoing right now. It's not yet complete. It's ongoing piece of work which we plan to take in once it is complete and probably contribute as well. HDFS Federation already exists, so we ship it as part of our version. So in future, we'll use it in conjunction.
But one thing is, federation needs to be thought unless and need not be thought unless and
until and unless we have more than 10,000 nodes,
I think.
So as of now, we, as I said, we do not have customers which are currently using 10,000 to 15,000 nodes, but we have some interest from certain areas. So that's why we are planning to probably invest into this. So and as a generic solution, this is.
So if we are federation, we won't have any data locality anymore.
It is not always if it is.
Okay, means as I said, means the tasks, for instance, will be, we'll try to have affinity to the home subcluster. So home subcluster, one of the way the policies can be decided is where the data resides. Otherwise, we'll have to do the copying of data across all the clusters if you want it. So that is one thing which is there. So that is what policy is pluggable. You can decide what the policy can be. So that can be one of the inputs, for instance, for you.
Any other queries?
We were talking still about single data center setup. Do you think that with the federation of HDFS and VR, because somehow we envision also multi data center setup with this kind of solution? Or is it still about big clusters?
This Yarn Federation means, if I understood your question correctly, this Yarn Federation thing can be adapted to multiple data centers as well. Means then you can probably have these subclusters as
clusters, data centers.
So you can have, if you can have a router service which is like single for a particular data center, that can maybe coordinate, have a policy store or a state store which is common to all the data centers. If that can be done, yes, you can expand the solution to a data center as well. Multiple data centers.
Do you have customers like this to expand to full business?
Currently, no.
No.
Currently, no. Means normally what we have found is that in enterprise space, it means people who have multiple data centers, they normally manage their data centers by themselves. So they'll probably will not be selling to them. So it's unlikely to be a use case for us, but let us see. I think the solution as such is scalable to multiple data centers also.
Thank you.